The Blaze Radio Network. On demand.
Hello, America. Welcome to the program. The press is now saying that Donald Trump has staked his presidency on four words. No, no, next question. They're saying he gave an absolute. He's never going to survive if it's anything but no, I didn't try to. No president is going to survive an absolute. Really? I didn't have sex with that woman, Miss Lewinsky? He seemed to survive. I guess we're just in the weird world where things only are important when the media decides that they are important. President Trump's on his first trip abroad. We'll have a little bit about that. Something about Tim Allen and Last Man Standing, Last Man Standing, canceled on ABC. Big push to bring it back. It's going to find a home. I think it's safe to say I can tell you why that was canceled. And yes, politics probably played a little bit of a role at the table when they were discussing it, but it all came down to the bean counters, and I'll explain that coming up in just a minute. Bill O'Reilly is going to be with us. And we just heard a commercial from a politician where he said something I don't think I've ever heard a politician say. Wow, did I make a mistake? We begin there right now.
I will make a stand. I will raise my voice. I will hold your hand. Because we have won. I will beat my drum. I have made my choice. We will overcome. Because we are one.
The fusion of entertainment and enlightenment. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
Hello, America. Let's start with Frank Keating. Here's an ad that is running now in Oklahoma, where he's running for governor, and he says, "I want you to know, I made a huge."
Yeah, he's not running for governor. He's former governor.
A former governor. Yes, he wants you to know we're running. We made a huge, huge mistake. Listen.
We made a mistake, potentially a $1 billion mistake. When I served as governor, I signed a bill that was supposed to jumpstart the wind industry, help the state, and create jobs. It didn't happen. This is a calamity for taxpayers.
Calamity.
Corporate welfare of the worst kind. We're on the hook to write blank checks to mostly out-of-state and foreign wind investors, all funded by you, the taxpayer. It cost us over $120 million last year alone. Money for schools, for teachers, for kids. All gone. As your former governor and a proud citizen of Oklahoma, I ask that all of us work together to end this now.
Okay, so here's the problem. I think that is really amazing.
It's amazing.
Really
it
amazing.
It is.
Because he's saying it's on him.
It's his fault.
It's his fault.
Yeah.
Okay. Here's where I think most people are. Now, I'm not from Oklahoma, so I don't know. You know, I don't know the ins and outs of former Governor Keating, and you know, I don't know who he is. But as somebody who's just a casual observer and kind of watching this, you think to yourself, okay, so what's changed in your life? Are you now just getting money from the anti-wind people? Are you now getting paid by the oil people? I mean, is this an honest pivot point in your life? It seems like a great thing, but I'm so callous.
And I mean, the group is fighting against this wind credit. It probably is people who are motivated to stop it, obviously, or they wouldn't be running this ad.
Sure.
You know, obviously, the issue is it sincere? And I think there's an obvious question with a politician whether any change is sincere.
Yes, yes.
What I thought was interesting about it is that he is not just saying it's bad. He's actually putting the blame on himself. He's saying, when I was running I was running your state, I did a crap heap of a job on this issue. Sorry about that. Please reverse it. To the point of, it was supposed to cost $2 million annually and cost $113 million in 2014. Supposed to cost $2 million and cost $113 million. And so they're looking to try to obviously turn this around, and it does sunset in 2021.
I think it's great. The thing is we've been lied to by so many people for so long, and you just don't know who's telling the truth anymore and what's behind it. So yeah. I'm not sure. I mean, I would hope that we can get to a place to where people can say, I'm sorry. I'm sorry. I added to this problem. It was my fault. You know, it's important to say it's my fault, not we made mistakes, mm-hmm. which a lot of it is we made mistakes. But he does say, when I was your governor,
I signed it.
But, you know, we made some mistakes. Yeah, it's important to say that. But it's really important to say, buck stops with me. I made mistakes. This is the part of anything that I own. But then, what's your pivot point? Anybody see the show last night with Penn Jillette where I had him on and I was talking about, I wanted to find Penn's pivot. I wanted to know, why are you an atheist? At what point? What happened to you? Because I believe his father died saying, Penn, come back to God, come back to God, come back to God. I think his mother eventually changed and went atheist. But he was raised with faith. So what happened? Once you understand somebody's pivot point, you can understand them. Now, for people who just say, Penn Jillette, he's an atheist, blah, 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 how would you be an atheist? Listen to his pivot point, and it explains almost his entire life.
And my parents, you know, were certainly not wealthy, but lower middle class. But it was a big deal that I had asked for the science thing, the ESP set. And my sister had already moved out, and I was essentially being raised an only child. So I had my parents every night do this ESP set with me that they'd bought. And then I was in the library, and I was reading about juggling, which if you remember your Dewey Decimal System, which I'm sure you do.
Yeah. I want to make it clear. what he's talking about is he saw Kreskin on TV, and he saw Kreskin do, a psychic thing where he was reading minds. Mm-hmm. And so he had saved up money. He asked his mom and dad for extra jobs and chores and everything else, and they helped kick in. He sent away for the ESP kit, and he would get together with them every night at the dinner table. He couldn't wait for that to come. And every night he would go to the dinner table and he would read their minds. And it worked. And it was amazing. And he thought it was real science. He thought this was real because it had been sold to him as real science. You can read people's minds. Okay. And his parents were there and he was young. He goes to school the next day to go look up some techniques on juggling. And he's in the library.
Juggling is right near magic.
Yes, sir. Yeah.
And I opened a book on magic, and I saw the trick that Kreskin had done on TV as a scientific experiment. I saw it as a trick in a Dunninger book.
Oh, my God.
And that moment in the library, as I remember it now, and I'm sure you change images as they go by, but was just this blood-draining experience.
Because you believed it.
Oh, yeah. I thought he was a scientist. Because he had said we were doing.
Did your folks? Your folks didn't believe that he was a scientist, though, right?
I think they think they thought I could look into ESP. They didn't want to really argue with me,
right?
And they were willing to do these. And I was so humiliated, and I was embarrassed in front of my parents that I'd bought this set and I thought it was real, and that we'd wasted our money on it, and that an adult who called himself a scientist had lied to me. And my grades went from straight A's in science right down to fail. I just disliked all adults.
Is this your biggest turning point, pivot point in your life?
And my hatred of magic got through the roof. Just adults lie to you about these things. So when I first met Teller, and he said, I do magic, it was just I don't want anything to do with that. First of all, they're cheesy. They're not rock and roll. They're greasy guys in tuxes.
Okay. Right.
So how did you get? Where are you with your atheism? How did that happen? Right there in the library. Adults lie to you about science. Adults lie to you about magic. It came from being humiliated. Straight A's in science. Do you remember the first time we talked to Pendulette about like 1989?
Yeah.
And he. One of the questions he asked me is, we're standing backstage. He said, "Do you see who won the Nobel Peace Prize or the Nobel Prize for science?" I'm like, "No,
no,
nobody does.
No.
I mean,
I don't think we've seen who won the Nobel Prize for anything at that point.
Yeah, right. I mean, nothing. He's huge in science, but this first, he thought everything is a fraud. And I'm not going to believe anything I hear, I read, I find in a book, an adult tells me, a position of authority. This, who knows who he would have been had Kreskin not entered his life through television.
It's a very butterfly effect, right? I mean,
that's
incredible. Think it's also terrifying.
Sure
as a parent to hear that story.
Oh my god. Where's the line?
There's no ill intent from the parents in that conversation. Right.
He didn't blame his parents. He felt humiliated in front of his parents.
But that's what I mean.
Yeah.
This thing, they were probably being encouraging. Oh, he wants to try this thing. That'll be cute and we'll help him and we won't overcorrect him. We won't, try to tell him something that will ruin his day. They probably went into that with the best intent. And wound up changing the entire course of his life to hardcore atheism. And if you're a religious person,
his father was beside himself. His father was like, son, no.
I mean, that's devastating as a parent. And God, as someone with a 5 and 4 year old right now, this is terrible.
Oh my gosh,
I'm totally gonna
screw him up badly.
Yeah,
you are. There's no getting around.
Because
you don't know what's screwing them up at all.
Right.
Their perception of things is sometimes completely out of whack.
Yeah. Right. The things that my daughter, and I've blocked them from me, but Hannah had said to me, I don't remember what it was. We were driving one time, and the goldfish story. Okay, you know the goldfish story where she had Prince Eric and what's the princess with Prince Eric? Anyway, she had Prince Eric.
The Little Mermaid, Ariel?
Yeah, Ariel.
Oh,
okay. You looked at him like I don't have any idea
how
old are your kids again?
5 and 4.
Oh, like my gosh.
Like 4-year-old girl.
You are a 4-year-old girl.
Yes.
And you don't know who Prince Eric and Ariel are.
I didn't know
you're a bad dad.
I didn't know who Prince Eric was, but terrible. Ariel I've heard terrible. Many times.
Terrible. I'm gonna
terrific.
Right, Jeffy?
I've never seen
saying,
the movie, though.
Disgusting. Jeffy is saying you're a bad dad. That is how bad of a dad you are.
If Jeffy's saying I'm a bad dad, I'm a great dad.
Okay, so I had Prince Eric, and she loved these goldfish and everything else. Well, goldfish live for about 10 minutes before they die. And I go into her room one day, and I see Eric floating on top.
Uh-oh.
And I'm like, oh, boy. I think, you know what, I've got time, I'm going to run to the fish store. Eric in a sandwich bag, and I bring him down to the fish tank store, and I'm like following with the sandwich bag, in the tank, and I'm like, no, that one, okay? And so I grab him, put Prince Eric in there, and he's fine. Like 2 days later, freaking Prince Eric is dead again. So I go back, and I'm following now with this sandwich bag, okay? I'm about 6 degrees away from the original Prince Eric until finally he dies and I'm like, ha, fish dead. Oh, well, kids, cry your little eyes over it. That's what happens in life, okay?
Yeah.
But I really had changed Prince Eric, like, I don't know how many times. Hannah is 14, 13, maybe. Now, when this happens, she's 6,
right?
Maybe 5.
Oh, good God.
So at 13 years old, I say to her, we're just talking around a table. And I said, it's like Prince Eric. She's like, what do you mean about Prince Eric? And I said, For the goldfish. You remember the goldfish? Yeah. He died like 8 times. I kept running down to get another deal. She just looked at me and she said, "What?" And I said, "Right, it's, I mean, it's a funny story now, right?" Okay. She told me like 5 years ago, she's 20, and she's like, "Dad, that really shook me when you said that." I'm like, "What? How? What? Why?"
Right.
I mean, is dad trying to be a good dad? How is that?
The goldfish.
You will never know how you're screwing them up, but I guarantee you, they will blame you for something.
Oh, oh God.
That's 100%.
The Glenn Beck Program. Mercury. This is
the Glenn Beck Program.
You know, Stu, we were just talking about parents. It's unbelievable how kids listen to you and hear you and judge things in a completely different way. I was dealing with Prince Eric, and I told this story to Pat one time, and he's like, "Oh yeah, listen to his story."
Yeah, my daughter Brienne, who's 28 now. When she was, I think, 4 years old, 4 or 5, took her out to get a Mother's Day present. And we bought this little locket, and she really liked it. So we got this locket that she could give Jackie for Mother's Day. So we go home, she takes it up in her room, and she's there the rest of the night. And we don't know what she's doing. But what it turned out was she had worked all night long on cutting out a little picture of herself, just a teeny tiny little picture. And she cut it out meticulously to stick it into the locket,
right,
and glue it there and shot it. So when Jackie opened it, there's the picture of her.
Oh,
I mean, it's a microscopic little picture. And so she was so proud. She just couldn't wait to give it to her mom. And so on Mother's Day, Jackie opens it up, looks at it. "Oh, unlock it. That's so great, honey." Opens it up, and there's this teeny tiny little picture. And we're like, "Oh, that is so cute."
No kidding.
She
Break
was
your heart.
Devastated by that.
So cute.
Devastated. Because we laughed. She thought we were mocking her. Her perception was that we thought it was ridiculous.
We think, we interpret. Jeez.
I wounded her for a long time.
Long time.
Long time.
We interpret as adults laughter of "that is so cute."
Yeah.
Kids don't understand the complexity of laughter.
Not at 4 years old, apparently.
Later than that, they can easily interpret you going, "Oh my gosh, that was so cute," as
being humiliated.
Humiliation.
Yeah.
And it scars them forever. Have a good day parenting.
Yeah, good luck.
Back in a minute.
Good
now
luck.
Now you want to talk about politics,
this
don't you?
This is the Glenn Beck Program. Mercury.
This is the Glenn Beck Program.
Bill O'Reilly is coming up in just about a half hour. I can't wait to hear his take on Roger Ailes. He had a very long, close relationship with Roger, and Roger was one of the most complicated men of all time. He was the biggest inspiration of my career and one of the biggest disappointments of my life. He was an amazing American who did so much good and such a flawed man that did so much bad. And we'll talk to him about that. Also, I can't wait to hear his take on Comey and the Trump stuff from this week. Bill O'Reilly joins us on Fridays in hour number 2, and we're glad to have him part of the Glenn Beck Program and the Blaze. Let's take a couple of news updates here. First, breaking news on Anthony Weiner.
Anthony Weiner will plead guilty to a single charge of transferring obscene material to a minor, pursuant to a plea agreement with the United States Attorney's Office of Manhattan, according to the New York Times. Federal authorities have been investigating reports that beginning in 2016, Mr. Weiner, 51, exchanged sexually explicit messages with a 15-year-old girl in North Carolina.
The charge carries a potential sentence of between 0 and 10 years in prison.
It's a plea agreement. He's not going to prison.
Yeah, meaning he could avoid prison. The ultimate sentence would be determined by a judge. He will, however, end up likely as a registered sex offender after this.
Wow.
I mean, they're saying he turned himself into the FBI this morning.
He is, you know, it's interesting that Hillary Clinton did everything she could to protect Uma and everything that was going on in her life. And Uma did exactly what Hillary did. She just stayed with the offender. She stayed with somebody that was humiliating her, all for either the good of the party or good of her career or good of the relationship. I don't know. Only they know.
Well, they did break up for a while, right? And she was filing for divorce, but I think they're back together now.
Yeah, but something's not right in that. Anyway, I don't want to speculate on somebody's personal life. I shouldn't have said that. But it's interesting how, while Hillary really never paid the price for standing by her man who continued to humiliate her, she actually did by passing that trait now on to Uma. Because remember, Comey, the reason why Comey made that statement that changed the course, I really believe, it wasn't the Russians, it was Comey. If Comey wouldn't have come out with that statement, I'm not sure Donald Trump would have won. I think that
the statement of investigating her?
Yeah, because remember, he got the computer from Anthony Weiner, and they had it for a while. They subpoenaed all the computers, and on one of the computers were all of the raw files of Hillary Clinton's emails. And he said, we don't know what's on those files. Right. We may have to open this up again. It turns out there was nothing, or so they say. But it's Anthony Weiner who lost this election. And you don't hear that said by anybody, do you?
In the documentary, Weiner, the actual documentary, the true documentary this time,
right.
I'll speculate on their personal life. She did not look happy at all.
No.
At any point.
She did not look happy at all.
At no point
now,
during
Anthony
that
Weiner
whole...
Never,
I never watched that documentary.
Nice
you've
got to
see so
it.
Good.
It's great. It's a great documentary.
It's on Netflix, isn't it?
Yeah. Wasn't it Netflix or was it Amazon?
I thought it was HBO or Showtime. I can't remember. But it's fantastic. It's about what his mayoral.
No, because I've seen it. So it was. I think it was Netflix.
It's about his mayoral run. And what I can't understand, and I guess anybody who sees it says the same thing all the way to the end, and he even says it, why would you allow people in to
they did
film
right.
you?
Bad.
Yeah.
It doesn't make any sense.
I mean,
was
he suicidal, career suicidal? Was this a cry for help? I mean, what is it? Or is it just grotesque arrogance?
I think it was certainly partially grotesque arrogance. There's no shortage when it comes to Anthony Weiner of that. Mm-hmm. But I think also he fancies himself a lot smarter than everyone else.
Yes, he sure does.
So A, he thinks he can talk himself out of everything. And B, he thinks he understands the media and how to manipulate it, and you have to do these things. People don't understand. He thinks he's above in an intelligence sort of manner everybody else. So he thinks he'll be able to do it. He'll be the one. It's like every communist on earth. They'll be the one that will make communism work.
Right.
And actually, he fits into that description largely as well.
Yeah, no kidding.
But it is that is him. And the fact that think about arrogance. You have gone through two career-destroying sex scandals.
Not career-destroying. Total humiliation.
Humiliation, right? He lost his congressional career, and he lost the mayoralship of New York. Remember, he was leading in the polls for a while.
And he lost his family. Do you want
everything.
Your children to think you're a sex offender? I mean, what happens when your children turn 14 and they think, oh, my gosh, I'm the age Dad was... Mm-hmm. You know, reaching out to.
Yeah.
I mean, it's sick.
And so then you are texting a 15-year-old girl with apparently at times your own child on the bed with you, right?
Well, you're exposing your package.
Now you've seen your third career destroying event. This one really affecting your wife, which, think of who Uma Abedin would have been. She would have been Steve Bannon. She is like the number two person in the White House, basically, when it comes to all reality. Like, the person who has the most personal connection with the president of the United States if her own dumb husband isn't texting 15-year-olds?
What does it say about the Democrats that they blame Comey and not Anthony Weiner? It was Anthony Weiner.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If he wouldn't have been on the bed texting with his little girl, they wouldn't have gone after those files. It wouldn't have happened.
Mm-hmm.
And they don't blame Hillary Clinton. They don't blame her policies. They don't blame her past. They don't blame the lying. They don't blame any of it. And they also don't blame Anthony Weiner. There's something really weird there in their denial. Don't you think? Is it just me?
Well, they're morons. I think that's
Not.
That's what you're groping for.
No, yeah.
They're really not.
Morons.
Yeah. So, no, you're not.
That's a good word.
Well, there's always a lack of willingness to blame yourself. Right. And that's, I think,
but that's not blaming yourself. That's not blaming yourself. That's blaming a child sex offender. That's the easiest guy in the world to pin blame on.
You are making Uma's life a disaster if that is the narrative that comes out of this. And I don't think Hillary wanted that.
You're not humiliating her.
Not if she gets out.
You know, I mean, and what does it say? Honestly, what's it say? If you're a friend of.
Well, she forwarded the emails, by the way, to Anthony. I mean, she sent the emails to Anthony. So she certainly is involved in this part of it. It's not her fault on the sex thing.
Yes, but you can easily spin. Yeah. You can easily spin the. If you're a friend of Uma, do you not say, Uma, I'm sorry. I love you. And I know, give him a chance. But you have. And quite honestly, he's now destroyed what we felt was right for the country. Mm-hmm. This is so far beyond you. He's a dangerous, out-of-control man. You can't have your children around him. You can't. Get out.
Well, there's a book that's coming out that says within 24 hours of the election loss, they had decided to try to make the public narrative that it was James Comey, who was the Comey letter, was to blame for their loss. And so it's amazing. If you think about it in that context, meetings Uma was probably in making decisions like that.
Yeah.
You know, she's going to have influence there. And if she's sitting in the room, are you going to say, you know what, we should blame it on Weiner?
Yeah, but no. but honestly, well, you're blaming it on Comey. What was that about?
Weiner. I mean, it's blatantly
it was about Anthony Weiner.
Right.
So it is blaming him. And you know what the problem is you have a compliant press. Can I tell you something? So right now, Erdogan, who I have, you know how I feel about Erdogan. He's a dictator. He is one of the most dangerous men in the world today.
Dictator of Turkey.
I believe he wants to be the leader of the caliphate. He's going to bring the Ottoman Empire back. In his mind, I believe that's what Erdogan wants. And he has convinced the people of Turkey just to rush to him and give him all this power. It's a supposed NATO ally who is rushing towards a Muslim dictatorship and caliphate. Extraordinarily dangerous. You also know how I feel about the Kurds. Kurds are great. We should be arming the Kurds. We should be helping the Kurds. Now there's a narrative going on, another one about Flynn. And Flynn was getting paid by Turkey, you know. And when it came to make a decision on whether we arm the Kurds to go against ISIS, he was against it. Well, Turkey is against it. Flynn is just doing the bidding of Turkey. May I take you through the timeline and show you how none of that works, and yet the press doesn't care? It's the same thing. If the press listens to the Hillary people and they say Comey is our target, they don't connect the dots to the real story, which is Weiner. If the left wants to say we're after Flynn, they won't connect the dots to what's really important for our safety. I'm not a fan of Flynn. I think he was a bad guy, but he's right on this particular case. And what the press is saying about him and Donald Trump is absolutely wrong. Watch. In August, Flynn signed a contract with Turkey. I don't remember how much. What was it? $400,000 or something like that. So I can't remember how much it was.
It was half a million.
Yeah, to be a helper for Turkey. He didn't disclose it. That's his problem. Election day, November 8th. The contract ends with Turkey. So he's made his money between August and November. He made his $500,000. He's now done advising Turkey. His problem is he should have said, I'm in a deal with Turkey back in August. He should have then said in November 8th, by the way, this deal is done. He didn't. It's revealed January 4th. He says, by the way, I had a Turkish connection. I was making money between August and November 8th. Okay. Then Rice and Flynn have a meeting 6 days later on January 10th.
This Susan is, Rice.
Susan right? Rice. Mm-hmm. Yes. This is when Susan Rice and Flynn have the talks about Turkey, et cetera, et cetera. January 20th is inauguration day. 6 days after he disclosed that he had a deal with Turkey, that's when Susan Rice and Flynn meet. And Susan Rice says, here's what we are going to do with Turkey. We're going to arm the Kurds in Syria. And the Syrians are going to push back on the Russians and the Syrians. They're going to go the other direction. Well, Turkey freaks out. Flynn says, that's a horrible idea. You can't do that. Now everybody in the media is saying, well, see, his influence with Turkey, he was getting paid to say those things. Fact number one, he got paid up until November 8th. That meeting happened January 10th, after he had disclosed that he had made money with Turkey. Because they are so hungry to just feast on the blood on the water of Donald Trump and make Flynn into an uber bad guy, here's what you, the American people, are missing. I've always said we should arm the Kurds. They're our greatest allies. The Kurds
in Iraq.
In Iraq. The Kurds in Syria are completely different. They don't even speak the same language. They are designated as an international terrorist organization, okay? They have done terrorist operations in Turkey. Why? They want their own little country. Not the Kurdish country of Iraq, but a separate Kurdish country on the border of Turkey and Syria. Here's why we shouldn't want that. They speak a different language. They have a different leader and a different philosophy. They are a Marxist, Leninist, communist group. They want a Marxist, Leninist state. We always pick the wrong people to arm, and we're doing it again. And say what you want about Flynn. Say what you want about Turkey. But Flynn and Turkey are right on this. And the American government, led by Barack Obama and now being followed by Donald Trump, is dead wrong. They should not get anything from us. No support, no cover, certainly no guns.
This is
the Glenn Beck Program. Mercury.
The Glenn Beck Program.
Hello, America. Bill O'Reilly is coming up next. Excited to talk to him this week. He should have an interesting perspective on Roger Ailes, because Bill O'Reilly was there at the beginning of Fox News. And now we're possibly at the end of Fox News, with MSNBC being number one in cable for a week. Wow.
This is the Glenn Beck Program. Mercury. The Blaze Radio Network. On demand.
This is going to be a fascinating hour. We are so fortunate to have joining us on Fridays, Mr. Bill O'Reilly, one of the steady voices of reason for two decades on Fox News, and was one of the first hires at Fox News from Roger Ailes, who passed away yesterday. We're going to talk to him about Roger Ailes, James Comey, the president, the world at large, and have him try to help make some sense out of this week in review. We begin there with Bill O'Reilly right now.
Entertainment and enlightenment. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
Mr. Bill O'Reilly, how are you, sir?
Good. Thanks for having me back. I appreciate it.
You are so warm and friendly and personable. I don't know if you catch that every time, but I can feel
it oozes out of the phone line.
You say very little. Just that opening, and I think, he loves me loves being here.
Yeah. Well, I rehearsed that all morning. Did I do okay?
Oh, man. Yeah, it sounded so sincere.
The depth and the warmth.
Anyway, Bill, I thought of you a lot yesterday.
Are we in a wind tunnel or
an oxygen tent? What the hell is happening? Can you stop with the breathing in the phone? You sound like Anthony Weiner.
I am outside.
Okay, well, you might want to come back inside.
Can you hear me clearly?
Yeah. Okay. Oh, good God. We try to do a professional radio program. I mean,
I understand, but I'm a child of nature.
I know. I feel that exuding from you. Yesterday, I thought of you, Bill, because of Roger Ailes. And you probably knew him better than anybody at Fox, and he didn't reveal all sides of himself to everyone. He is one of the most complex men I have ever met. He is, in some ways, an icon to me, an idol to me in some ways, and honestly, personally, one of the biggest disappointments in my life at the same time. And it's weird. I've never liked someone as much as I like Roger Ailes, and then despised some of the things that he did at the same time.
Well, I can't speak to your situation because for two reasons. Number one, you are my friend. And number two, he was my friend. And as you know, didn't get involved with that.
I know.
When you were at Fox News, only to the extent that I told him quite clearly that you were very beneficial to the network. And then you and I partnered up to do a tour together. And so he knew that I was in your corner. So I don't know any more than that, and when you left, I was obviously disappointed because I didn't think it was good for the network at all. But you're you, and he was him. And
yeah, I'm not even talking about that, Bill. I just you know that Roger, when he wanted to be, would be ruthless. And I don't want to get into all the charges back and forth of what happened to other people because that's going to happen in court or none of us were there for that. So I don't even want to talk about that. I mean, if Roger wanted to protect you or somebody else, you knew he would. He would be loyal, loyal, loyal.
Yeah.
But there was also this side of him that when he wanted his way, he could be the most ruthless man ever.
Well, I don't know about that, but he was certainly a businessman who operated in a world where what was good for him was going to happen. And so if you were going up against what was good for him, then there would be a conflict. Understand that. And I had to deal with that too.
I know.
That thing about Ailes. But you and I both know, and this is important, and I want people to read the USA Today op-ed that I wrote about him. You and I both know that what television and radio is all about. It's about one thing, money. And if you get in the way of money, you're going to get hammered and you're going to die. If you can make them money, you'll prosper.
Yeah.
That's what it's all about. So Al's, that was his basic business plan. I'm going to be successful. I'm going to crush the opposition, not just beat them. I'm going to crush them. Okay? Because there were very, very strong psychological reasons why he hated the establishment.
Mm-hmm.
He felt that they were arrogant and they never were fair to him, and there was all of that. But the one thing that separated him, and everybody should know this, even if they don't have any emotion invested in Fox News or Roger Ailes, is that if you got into trouble and he thought you were a loyal person, he would do anything to help you. And that is very different from most of the executives that
work
in radio.
Very true. Bill, what was it like at the beginning of Fox News? When you were there, I mean, you were one of the first hires, and he came to you, and you said in your USA Today article today, your op-ed piece on him, you know, do you want to see a treatment of what I want to do? And he said, no, just tell the truth, take no prisoners, don't make any, you know, no sacred cows, and don't screw it up.
Yeah. Well, he knew me from Inside Edition, where I had anchored that program for 6 years and made it a success after David Frost got fired after 3 weeks on the
Frost.
Air. And that that's Dale's the businessman. So he knew me. He knew that I turned the program around. He knew that I could do it. But I was surprised that, because I had heard, well, he's this ideological guy and, mm-hmm. you know, he wants it his way. And I was surprised that he never told me, hey, I want you to do this or hammer this guy or be friendly to that guy. Never. He just wanted me to go and do it. And that's why we were successful.
Roger Ailes is gone. He left Fox News. They started changing Fox News. Obviously, you are no longer with Fox News. I remember somebody said to me when I was there, so who's going to replace Roger Ailes? And I said, I don't think anybody can replace Roger Ailes. But they certainly weren't really grooming anybody. Bill Shine was probably the closest that could begin to think like Roger. But he never in his mind, I think, left the roots that he had in Ohio. He could still think like somebody in the center of the country, which is nobody in New York City at an executive level is doing. We've seen this week. Go ahead, comment on that, and then I have another question.
Look, Roger was a child of, he was one of the first baby boomers, okay? He was a little bit before that, born in 1940, but he had that mentality, and his father was a tough guy. And, you know, Roger came from a working class, and he was a hemophiliac. So he had, as a child, you know, tough health issues, and he was a small guy. He was a little rotund. So I think he was a victim of bullying. He took all of that and he said, you know what? I'm going to show you. And I don't care who you are. I don't care, if you're Richard Nixon or Ronald Reagan, or if you're, the head of GE, I'm going to show you. I mean, I'm going to show you how it's done. Because I have a link, just as you have and I have, with regular Americans, working Americans. I have that link, and that's what made him successful.
You think that's what he saw in you? Because I think that's the same kind of attitude that...
No doubt about it. You know, he could have had all these, you know, stones and forests and, you know, all of these network people who were named after inanimate objects. Could have had them. Could have hired them. All right? He could have done that.
I saw...
He could have had pocket hankies all over the place, British accents,
yeah.
You know, Peter Jennings clones. Could have done all of it. But he wanted regular people. And so he hires me. He hires Hannity. He hires, you know, a bunch of tough Irish guys who we knew would be brawlers. He hired you. And he put together a staff that he knew blue-collar people would identify with. It's not, you know, he was a genius, but what he did wasn't genius. It was just out of the mainstream. And that's why Fox News became a $2.5 billion a year grossing bank. I mean, can you imagine that much money? And he did.
He was a genius. And what he did, I think, was genius. It was just out of the. It was just actually in the mainstream, but not the mainstream of media. But I you know as well as I know, Bill, that you could be confused by one of the most complex issues of healthcare and the bills and everything else. You'd see Roger Ailes for 2 minutes, and he'd boil it down off the top of his head in two lines, and you'd go, "That's freaking genius! It's brilliant." He could just
that came from
boil
his
it down.
Background, you know. He told me a story one time about Ronald Reagan, who was foundering, and I have this in my book, Killing Reagan. I have this exact story in the book, and Reagan was lost when he was running as Mondale the second time around, and he got hammered the first debate. So they brought Ailes in for the second debate, okay? Because the poll numbers are going down for Reagan. Reagan looked discombobulated. Nancy was freaking out. So here comes Ailes walking in, okay? And he didn't know Reagan that well. And he sat Reagan down, looked him in the eye, and said, "Hey, you're going to lose. The whole thing's going to blow up unless you start to wise up." Mm-hmm. And then Reagan was startled, because who talked to Ronald Reagan that way when he's president of the United States? Nobody. But, you know, you can see Ailes doing it. And then Ailes says, "Here's what you're going to do, all right? We're gonna have three or four themes that you're going to emphasize, and I'm going to give you two strike lines that when we know Mondale's going to say certain things, you're going to go back at him. And one of them was, I won't hold my opponent's age and inexperience against him." You remember that?
Yeah.
So Ailes was a political guy, a political consultant, and he basically brought that over to TV. And he didn't want pinheads. You know, he didn't want pinheads on the air, you know, with, I think we have to go back and look at the Taft-Hartley amendment. He, you know, that gets you fired faster than anything. So, you know, his formula worked. It works to this day. They're still doing Roger Ailes on Fox News. The personnel has changed, so they're having a hard time. But they're still doing what he put into place.
You know, you said that he didn't hire rocket science people, but I don't know if I've ever told you about my interview with him. The first time that I had met him two or three times, and he just said, "Let's just have a casual dinner. I just want to get to know you." And then he said, "I'd like to talk to you about joining Fox." And we had dinner together in some private room at a steakhouse in New York. And the first question he asked me was, "What did you think about the 1972 China trade deal?" And I said, "Roger, I got to be honest, I don't know."
Yeah.
And then the next question was, "Well, what did you think? What was the biggest accomplishment of the Eisenhower administration?" And I looked at him and I said, "Roger, I got two ways to go here. I could either bluff and kind of make something up, or I could tell you the truth. I'm not up on that one either. And possibly end the interview right here. But I'm going to bank on not bluffing with you. I don't know." He said, "Really?" And then he said nothing to me for 10 long minutes as we ate.
Really? You ate your salad, so.
Yeah, but he got up. Neither of us had salad. And we got up afterwards, and then he pushed me to the wall. I mean, questioned my faith, got in my face so much. And I thought, this is over. I lost 15 pounds of sweat. And I thought, this is over. I'm never going to work at Fox. He stood up at the end, and he said, "It is great to meet a man who actually knows what he knows, isn't afraid to say it, and isn't afraid to say what he doesn't know. Good for you." And that was the end of the interview. It was a nightmare. A nightmare. He was wicked smart and knew exactly what he was looking for.
Yeah, and he carried that over, and that bluntness got him in trouble, as I wrote in the op-ed. You know, there's two ways to take it. The way you took it, and the way that some other people, they hated him.
Well, you know, but Bill, you know,
there's
a lot of people, because I watched you closely, because you have a reputation of being a hothead. And I never saw that. And I saw, what I did see was Bill O'Reilly expects you to do your job and to do it with excellence, because he's doing his job with excellence and not phoning it in. And if he's not going to screw it up, you don't screw it up. So the only time I ever saw anyone have a problem with you was when they were bluffing. And it was the same with Roger Ailes. It's the same with me. Don't bluff. We can all work together. Just do it.
If you're going to run a successful enterprise in an ultra hyper competitive situation, you have to demand excellence. You have to. It's like the military. I mean, if you're going to be one of the elite troops, I mean, you can't allow people to, you know, slough off or give you 75% effort. So, you know, I mean, but a lot of people don't like that. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people don't want to be challenged. And a lot of people don't want to be criticized. So therefore, Ailes made enemies after enemies after enemies. Plus, his conservative ideology alienated the press right off the jump. And they were out to get him. I mean, if you look at the clip file from the time Fox News started in 1996 to this very day,
I know
the negative Fox News articles run 100 to 1.
All right, Bill O'Reilly. Bill O'Reilly at BillO'Reilly.com. We're going to continue our conversation. I want to ask him when we come back if you know MSNBC is beating Fox News for a week after Bill O'Reilly leaves. Does Fox News survive without Roger Ailes, without Bill O'Reilly and others in a possibly new direction? We get that. Also, I want to talk about Trump, the week he's had, Comey and everything else as he joins us every Friday. And you can hear him every day on his podcast at BillO'Reilly.com.
Glenn Beck Program.
888-727-BACK.
Mercury.
The Glenn Beck Program.
Bill, I've got about 2 minutes here, and I want to switch gears going to Trump. But one last question on Fox. Something stunning has happened that has never happened before. You leave cable news, and Rachel Maddow is now the number one person on cable news. And MSNBC won cable news for the week. What does that say about what's happening there? I know you watch the ratings. Is this beginnings of Fox actually having to really work hard to hold its place?
They have a problem. Fox News has a problem. There's no doubt about it. Whenever you lose key personnel in any industry, competitive industry, sports, media, you better have a plan. And it doesn't look like FNC has a plan. The Trump haters are going over to MSNBC, and there's a lot of them, a lot of Trump haters. So they're being bolstered by the problems the president is having. But on the Fox News side, you know, they made their decisions. They didn't have to make those decisions. And they really didn't have a plan. You know, when you take a guy like me out of the lineup and I'm doing 5-6 million viewers a night, you better have a plan to replace that.
Yeah, well,
Tucker Carlson is very talented. He's very good. But I don't see a plan.
Okay, Roger, we're going to come back. And now we're going to talk about the week of Donald Trump, the mistakes that were made. What did the press miss? How about the new special prosecutor, James Comey? And Anthony Weiner is back in the news. Bill O'Reilly returns next.
The Glenn Beck Program. Mercury. The Glenn Beck Program.
Bill O'Reilly joins us now for a look at the week in review. Bill, Donald Trump had a pretty hair-raising week.
I think that's true. And if you want to break it down, we can do that in about a minute. The first thing that put him back was a allegation that he gave classified information to Russians when he met with them, the Russian ambassador and the foreign minister. That story's bogus, and it's gone away pretty much now, but the anti-Trump media ran with it heavily, okay? But look, Trump in conversation was trying to convince the Russians to help him with ISIS more. So he said, look, you know, they want to bomb everybody's airlines. You've already lost one airline over the Sinai. Here's what they're doing. Our intel says they're close to doing it. that's not giving away national security. And he has a perfect right to try to convince the Russian. These are the two top guys. So it's like talking to Putin.
That was a bogus story.
He went away fast.
I will tell you that you know, Israel couldn't be more happy that Trump is in office. And they said it was us, and the official word is we're good, and et cetera, et cetera. But some of their generals did come out, and they were pushing for we can't trust America with anything.
Yeah, all right.
You know, so, I mean, it was a big deal, but it wasn't an impeachable offense, which the media was trying to make it into.
I'm looking at it from a does it hurt the American people, and it does not. Okay. The second one, much more serious. So, he fires Comey. I don't think Trump, by the way, because he's such a wealthy man and in his life never really had to deal with blowback, understands that when you take a controversial action, people are going to come after you. Mm-hmm. So what happened was he fires Comey. Comey's friends in the FBI said, okay, now it's our turn. So they leak out notes that the former FBI director took on a one-on-one meeting with the president. And the notes say that Trump wanted Comey to lighten up on the National Security Advisor Flynn, who was fired as well. Okay, big story. Got to get to the bottom of that story. But here's the deal. As soon as I heard that, I went, didn't Comey testify under oath that there was no interference in the Russian investigation in front of Congress? Yes, he did.
Hang on.
Didn't the second in command testify that there was no interference in Russia? Yes, he did. Okay, so now you got Comey and McCabe both saying under oath, hey, you know, there's no interference. All right, so then...
Wait. Can I just point out something? I just want to point something out here. He answered a very specific question about was there interference from the Justice Department. He did not talk about White House interference. He answered a very specific question. Was there interference from this person, this person, or this person? And that's the answer. No, there was no interference there.
Okay. But on McCabe, it was much broader. And all I'm saying to you is this. If President Trump did put the arm on James Comey in a private meeting to somehow go easy on the Russian investigation in total, that should have been reported, and it was not.
Right.
Okay?
Yes.
That's all. So then you basically say, all right, we have a mess. It's a mess. And, of course, the anti-Trump media is impeach him, hang him, set him on fire, you know, all of that. So I'm sitting there going, okay, why don't we just have a level headed? Now, I did call for on BillO'Reilly.com in the podcast, as you put nice enough to mention, I did call for a special investigator to be appointed, because then Trump could say, okay, I'm going to cede my mistake. Let's get somebody in here. And Mueller's a good choice. With one exception, and this was pointed out in the Wall Street Journal today, Mueller is a friend of Comey's. So there's no doubt that the leak came from the FBI, and that's why Comey got fired in the first place, because Trump felt that the FBI was leaking all kinds of stuff out. Now, I think that's going to be borne out to be true, my opinion.
So you're one of the only people, by the way, talking to Bill O'Reilly from BillO'Reilly.com, who knew he had a podcast or a book. But he's just written a book called Old School. Two books? What's the other book?
Killing the Rising Sun and Old School Life. Get them for Dad.
Whatever. Yeah, get them for Dad. They've got to sell. They're backing up in Bill's garage. He's got to get them moved out. He's got
to. I know. I don't have to go.
Got
to
pull his family van in there. Anyway, BillO'Reilly.com. So, Bill, this is interesting because a lot of people knee-jerk reaction is. A special prosecutor. We don't need a special prosecutor. I think this is actually good because I really don't believe, that Donald Trump is involved in some scheme with Vladimir Putin. I don't believe that he was trying to, in nefarious ways, get Comey to drop it. I think what he was looking for was, look, dude, I want to be your friend. You be my friend. There's nothing here. He's leaving anyway. Let's just move on. I think that he doesn't think of things the way he needs to because he's president. He's thinking of things like a businessman.
Agree, but here's the important question for you. How do you say dude in Russian?
Niet. You don't.
Look, the key part of your question was the word jerk. So on the left, whatever Trump does is impeachable and we have to murder him. On our right, we don't want to know because we like him. So the special counsel, whatever you want to call Mueller, right, is necessary to stop the madness, which it has. Which it has. Stop the madness. We have a country to run here. If we need a fourth investigator, FBI 1, Senate 2, House 3, if we need a fourth, fine. Now, it isn't Trump's style, and I can tell you this because I know him very well, to make backroom deals that don't benefit Trump to the tune of billions of dollars. And he doesn't do that. Mm-hmm. He did want to have a good relationship with Putin. Yes. Did he sell out? Did he do anything untoward? We'll find out. We'll find out. But right now on the record, there isn't anything.
So, but you do believe, you do believe that these investigations are important and can clear this up.
Yes.
So
absolutely.
Do I.
Absolutely. You got to.
So there's
that.
A lot of people, Bill, though, that are on the right who just don't want to hear it. And they think that this is.
That was Nixon, too. When Nixon left office, 33% of Americans didn't want him to, according to the exit poll. When he got on the helicopter and waved goodbye. So, he's always going to have that part.
So let me ask you this. So the other part of this, one, we have to have an independent investigation. Let's just get it done. The second part of this is, I mean, I leave out the press because I don't think the press is curable at all. But the president has got to learn that this is not a business deal. You're the president of the United States.
Absolutely.
Will he learn that?
That is the most astute question that you've asked in this hour. The big mistake that Trump made, and he can't make it again, was having a private meeting with James Comey. If you're president of the United States, you're not a private meeting with anybody. Didn't the Lewinsky thing, get
you're
through?
Right.
You don't meet privately with anybody, ever. You always have somebody there. I mean, Andy Card was Velcroed to Bush the Younger's thigh.
Bill, you were there at the height of my, controversy with me, when I was white hot, hatred or love, and even I, at that point, would never have meetings with people. I'd never have dinners with people. By myself, ever. And that's me. I just knew I was a target.
Absolutely.
The president
Absolutely.
Has got to learn this.
I always left my door open when anybody would come into my office. You can't. And the fact that Comey, Trump doesn't even trust him, and you meet with him alone,
so
you can't do that.
If you're an advisor and you're talking to Donald Trump, what is the advice you give to him to make this stop?
Well, he's already done it. So you can't, the Justice Department appointed Mueller, but you know that Trump had to okay that. Sessions doesn't do anything on his own. So he's already done it. And it's already succeeded to some extent. Now he goes over, he goes abroad. It's a big dog and pony show over there. Yeah. And the anti-Trump press is going to come out with something every day. You know that. Mm-hmm. Every day there's going to be something else. Yeah. Somebody will leak something, and they'll do this, and they'll do that. But it doesn't reach critical mass, all right, unless there is a very specific allegation. And now Trump has just got to say, hold it. I did, you got four investigations. Let him do it. Let him do it. And then he doesn't have to be involved with it anymore. So I think he avoided the bullet, but boy, he can't make too many more mistakes. He just cannot do it.
Going over to Israel, he won't say that, or he said that they're not going to move the embassy. I thought if there was anyone who would move it, it would probably be him.
That's a Netanyahu call, though. He's not making that call. He's going to do what Netanyahu wants. So we don't know. We're not privy to what Netanyahu wants. But if Netanyahu wants the thing, the American embassy in Jerusalem, it'll be there. If he doesn't, it won't. That's what's going on there.
You're saying Netanyahu tells our president what to do on that?
On a case like this, yes.
Hmm. Wow. Bill O'Reilly from BillO'Reilly.com. I pay him in sandwiches, so I promise him that he could say something nice about something that he's done.
We need to get everybody mobilized. Go to BillO'Reilly.com to get signed book specs. And I'll give you yours free. Oh, signed wow. Killing the Rising Sun for Dad and Granddad.
Wow. You know, I don't believe I have any of your books signed. I don't think you signed a single book for me. Not one.
But now I will. But who are you going to give it to? This is what I want to know. I'm going to send you two signed books. All right. Now, you can put them right up on eBay and make some money. But if you're going to give them to somebody, who are you going to give them to?
I'm going to give one of them to my dad. Because
good. Give him old school. I'm sure he's an old school guy.
Oh,
right?
He's gonna love it. I'm gonna take a shovel and bury your book right next to him, and he's gonna love it. He's gonna love it.
Oh, nice. So. Very good.
BillO'Reilly.com. Grab his books. The Killing the Rising Sun is fascinating. You'll learn more than you ever knew about World War II and Japan. And old school,
I
didn't
read. Can
I say
one more thing?
No, geez, what?
Can I say one more thing?
What?
People came in on this interview late. Beck posted on The Blaze, and I posted on BillO'Reilly.com the whole interview from top to bottom. So I think people might want to listen to it again. If they came in the middle, they can hear the whole thing.
And I especially want you to listen, go back and listen to the warm, friendly greeting that
it meant so much to you, right?
It meant so much. I'm going to carry it on.
Moved us all deeply. No, you couldn't do it any better.
Morning, I started it.
People, people say that you're a cold bastard, and
no,
I don't see
oh my
it.
Goodness.
I just
no.
don't
oh
see
my
it.
Goodness.
Yeah.
Would it help, Beck, if I called you dude? Would that help?
I think so.
No, it really wouldn't.
I think you should go back, too, and listen to the incredible compliment that Mr. O'Reilly paid to you, Glenn, when he said, this is the most amazing question you've asked in this hour. Which was a huge, what a hurdle to clear.
You're
the most beautiful girl in the room.
And we're alone. Bill, thanks a lot, man. Appreciate it.
All right, guys. We'll see you next week.
See you next week. Bill O'Reilly every Friday and every day at BillO'Reilly.com.
One thing I like about Bill O'Reilly is he never makes me feel panicked. Like, whenever there's a really stressful situation, he just kind of, like, says stuff, and I'm like, okay, yeah, I guess we're all right. Who cares? Yeah. We'll make it through this.
Very calming.
There's something calming about the way he talks about issues that I really enjoy.
Yeah.
You freaked me out. No.
And you know what? I want to, but his deal is he never reads beyond the day. He has told me this over and over again. I'm off the air, I'll say, come on, Bill. George Soros, come on. And he's like, you can live ahead of the news cycle. I live today. This I know to be true today. And
you need both.
And that's where the tension between us comes, which I really enjoy. And the fact is he is just he smells like a funeral home. When you talk to him, don't you just
feel that funeral home?
Yeah. Okay.
I'm only saying that because I know he's listening.
This is the Glenn Beck Program. Mercury.
The Glenn Beck Program. 888-727-BECK.
Hello, and welcome to Friday. We've got a lot to still cover, and I want to cover some of the things that you can do this weekend, some of the movies that are opening up, some of the things that we have to pay attention to in the news over the weekend. And let's just say this. Thank God it's Friday. America, you've made it another week.
The Glenn Beck Program.
Mercury.
The Blaze Radio Network. On demand.
Hello, America. Lots to talk about here. Some of the coolest things that Google debuted in their big event this week, showing what Google's future is, what our future is. It's starting to become amazing with AI.
Nice.
Apple has their new $5 billion campus, has a 100,000 square foot gym.
Have you seen that building?
Do you know what's not in it? Daycare. They have everything. No daycare. People are doing something new. They're marrying themselves. It's called soligamy, which I love. There are four petitions out urging ABC to keep The Last Man Standing. We'll give you an update on that. Also, vulnerable high school girls in Japan. The culture of dates with older men. What's happening in Japan is freaky. We begin there right now.
Entertainment and enlightenment. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
Let's start with this. This is the weirdest stories, but one of the weirdest stories ever. Vulnerable high school girls in Japan. .com, I think, is that's a website of yours. Isn't it? Listen to this. High school dating, no big deal in parts of the world, but in Japan, it means something quite different. Here, high school dating matches girls in uniforms with men in their 40s and 50s and beyond. Sometimes it involves a walk around the block or a drink at a bar. More often, it involves sex, child prostitution by another name. It's easy to talk to these girls, says one man in his 30s who is sitting at a wooden school desk at the AKB High School Cafe. 17-year-old girl in a school uniform brought the man and his colleague, both of whom declined to give their names, beers and chit-chat. We find regular bars uninteresting these days. I get tired of the regular bars with old women. These girls look so cute. The uniforms make them look 1.5 times cuter than they actually are. 1.5 times
cuter? Yeah, there's been a scientific study on that. Yeah.
Really? 1.5 times cuter?
It's actually 1.4, but you're just rounding up.
We round it up. We round it up.
So here's the problem. Boys in Japan, the girls, they're not interested in girls. No matter what is happening, no matter what the girls do, the boys are not interested in dating the girls. Japan and Japanese, it's over. It's over. They can't get people to have sex with each other, and the boys are finding it repulsive. What is happening? What? I swear to you. I mean, maybe it was the bomb. Maybe we didn't create Godzilla. Maybe what happened? This culture went from such a great culture. I was talking to somebody who spends a lot of time in Japan yesterday about this, and he said, "The deal is they were such a tight culture. Still today, if you go over and you're from another place and you're not Japanese." You're at the lowest rung of the ladder. So it's still such a very tight culture that just almost kind of inbred itself. What is happening? Any ideas? I mean, I don't know how you get a 14-year-old boy not to look at a cute girl.
So if I were to immigrate to Japan, could I become a Japanese citizen?
No, you could not, and we should stop talking. No, you should stop talking right now.
It is a very strange cultural thing. I mean, I guess when you talk about, you look at the explosion there, for example, of competitive gaming. I mean, they have tournaments there where 20,000 people go to watch people play video games. Yeah. I mean, it is...
And they have robots. They have sexual robots. So it's not like they're not feeling the urge. They just would rather make it with a robot.
Well, and when you spend 50 years telling people that we're overpopulated, we need to slow way down, that the Earth can't sustain it, we're going to cause extinction of the human race because there's too many human beings, and you beat that into people's heads for 50 years, it was really effective in Europe and Asia. It was not as effective here in the United States.
It's still pretty effective.
But it was fairly effective. We're barely at the replacement rate right now. They're way below it. And so they've changed.
Our children's children will not know a Japanese person.
Yeah.
I don't tend to believe
that. I don't know about that, but
50 yeah. years, they're zero.
The replacement rate thing, though, I mean, there's other factors into that. I mean, you know, we also live a lot longer.
There's not as many factors in Japan as there are here.
So wait.
They
you
don't
think
do 50, immigration? Really.
There's no immigration.
Right.
There's no immigration into the culture, and they don't let you. They don't want to be a melting pot.
They don't intermingle.
Right. So you have this culture that is not replacing itself. Mm-hmm. I mean, in 50 years, how are you going to know somebody who's from Japan as we know it? There won't be a military. There won't be any. They won't have enough Japanese people.
Mm. I don't know. I mean, I think those things tend to work themselves out.
Have you watched Godzilla?
Oh my gosh!
Have you seen
the documentary?
Yes.
Yes, that's true.
Mothra comes. It's over, man.
But that, I mean, if you need to, you fire up the engines of replacement rate when you see Mothra fly in. That's when you start.
But they're already all dressed like little schoolgirls, and the guys are like, whatever.
The other problem they've had is that the words don't match their mouth movements. And over time, when you're saying, hey, do you want to get together with me?
Yeah.
They don't understand that because it doesn't match what his mouth is moving.
Right.
It's weird. Yeah, it's weird.
So, you know, I think this is actually, I think this is part of Apple. Apple's new corporate headquarters, the giant spaceship donut in California, nearing its completion. The last of the solar panels and drought-tolerant trees were installed. Blah, blah, blah. Talks about all the things that are happening. Air conditioning system that sucks outdoor air in to remind employees of the environment outside.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, I mean, they really went. It is the Pantheon for healthy, career-focused Silicon Valley type. However, they have this a two-story yoga room. They have a 100,000 square foot fitness and wellness center. They have medical center, dental services, blah, blah, blah. But 175 acres, not a single place for childcare.
Hmm. So is that a statement? Is there a statement?
I don't know.
Is there an oversight?
No, it's not an oversight. Don't you think that's a statement? Don't you think that's this is not a family place. This is, you're single-minded. You're going to get things done. You're going to focus on you, focus on us. This is not a place where you're coming and you're going to, you know, also have children. What?
Bunch of brats running around.
So you think it's, because I mean, let's just say, someone did this. If you did this in this company, you had a giant facility like that and you didn't include
daycare. I'd have school here.
You might say, someone could make the point that, hey, you know, we don't want your kids to be in daycare. We want them to be home with mom or home with dad. There's a statement to be made on that side, too, to not have daycare. I doubt that's what Google's doing. Certainly.
Yeah, I have a hard time believing Google in California is saying moms should stay at home.
Is that they're saying we don't want your sticky-fingered kids here at our place?
Well, no, I don't know what it is, but it is a statement of some sort. Look, you know, the whole concept behind these campuses, and it's accurate, it's real. You have medical stuff. They have dry cleaning services. So you just come in with your laundry and they do your laundry for you. They try to take care of all of the things that you worry about so you don't ever have to leave campus and leave work. So one of the biggest things that parents worry about are their kids. You have them in daycare. You don't want to have to worry about them. So they're right here. They're right here on campus. And you want to stop by sometime, just see them, make sure everything's okay. You know the people. Hey, we're taking that worry off your plate. When somebody is thinking about, hey, let's do their dry cleaning. Let's have 17 different restaurants so they don't have to leave, so they can work with their colleagues at lunch. I went to Facebook. You were with me. You weren't with me. They have a woodworking shop. They have places where you can go. Yeah. You can go and woodwork and learn how to, woodwork and create there.
I can't tell you how many afternoons I just want to put a piece of stick on there and run the lathe on something.
But what I'm saying is they're that down into the weeds of detail of, we want you to be able to do whatever it is you want. We want you to stay here. Mm-hmm. So what are you saying when you have everything here because we want you to stay here? Oh, your kids have to go someplace else. For instance, you want to work late? You have to go pick your kids up from daycare. I got to leave. Well, not if daycare is right here. I don't have to leave. Sucks worry about the traffic. You know what? I'm going to be a little late.
It sucks you into work more.
I mean, sucks you into work.
There is a capitalist motivation to these services.
And please, that's the point.
And that's great.
Yes, it is. It's great.
I have no problem with that. I mean, it makes the lives easier for the employee and it helps their work.
So now, what is the statement that's being made? You don't get married and have kids.
Yeah, I mean, I could be saying, look, it's up to you. I mean, I don't have no problem with the company also saying, by the way, look, take care of your own freaking kids. We're not a daycare. We're a workplace.
I'm not judging. I am not judging them. I'm saying that they should. I'm just wondering, with a company that has thought through this much to be able to keep you on campus, why wouldn't
and
you do
spent,
that?
And Apple just spent, I mean, $5 billion. Right. We've got, like you reported, there's the drought-resistant trees were put in.
Right. They've thought about everything. Yes. We want to make sure that people are thinking about the environment outside. So
they don't have a changing table for a baby.
Pulling that air back in. They've thought this through.
Yeah.
Why wouldn't you do that?
It does seem strange.
You couldn't fit it into 2.7 million square feet. It's just
I agree with you on that. I mean, I don't want to get into conspiracies. Right? For instance, Last Man Standing. Here's what I said on the TV show 2 or 3 days ago, and we went through a bunch of articles. The guys at the table went through a bunch of articles, and they all said it wasn't true. It shows up on Snopes as the reason. So here's the reason that I didn't realize until 2 days ago. It's all contractual, and it's always about the money. So here's what happened. Last Man Standing is a very expensive show to produce. It looks good, got a good cast, and he's making a lot of money, okay? Well-written. It's smart. It's a good quality show. It's on Friday nights. That is not where you put the big show. Now, it is number two in ratings, but it is also not the night, okay? Friday nights is not the night. It is a low watched night for television across the board. It's the difference between prime time and daytime. So they have this deal. 20th Century Fox is the producer of The Last Man Standing. They had it in the contract that 20th Century Fox would pay for all of the production up until the 8th year. Well, this is the contract that begins to get into the 8th year. After 100 episodes are made, that's the tipping point. When you have 100 episodes in the can, then it can go into syndication. If they have 136 episodes now in the can, so they're fine for syndication. So 20th Century Fox, they paid for it because they wanted it to be a hit. They wanted people to know about it. Then they wanted to take that, and they would make the money on syndication. ABC wanted the show for free. 20th Century Fox, you pay for the show. We'll pay you a fee for the show, but we're not going to produce it. You keep those rights. We'll get the advertising rights first run. That was the deal. 8th year, they're negotiating. ABC looks at it and says, it's way off the charts for the budget on a Friday night. We're going to be changing our Friday night to not include comedies. Well, it's the number two show on the network. Should we move it? Well, if we move it, we have a chance of destroying the audience because they're used to it on Friday night. So usually audiences don't follow. It's a real cost in advertising and everything else. Plus, we're going to have to pay for the show. Plus, is anybody here around the table? Are you guys fans of the show? No. There's nobody that fought for the show.
Right. I think that's a big point. And when you want to talk about the conservative politics of it, did that influence it? I think it probably does.
Yeah, but it wasn't canceled because of politics.
It could have been, like, if it was a liberal show, it would have been saved.
If it was the abortions are fun show,
yes,
it would have been saved because it would have had advocates at the table.
Right.
But I don't think that anybody at the table said, I can't stand that show because of its politics. What they did is they said, eighth year, we're not going to get the reruns. It's going to cost us a lot of money. We have to refocus it and re-advertise everything because we're going to have to move. That's risky. There's a lot of money involved in this, or do you want to just start fresh because it's getting long in the tooth? It's, you know, we're approaching its eighth year. What do you want to do? There were no advocates for the show at the table, and they said, move on. That's what happened.
Yeah.
Now, is that what Snopes said?
I would say largely, yeah. I mean, I think you kept saying season eight. It would be going to season seven.
But this is the contract that starts season eight.
Right. After season five, if a show isn't a blockbuster like The Big Bang Theory or The Walking Dead, every additional season becomes harder and harder to procure, even if the ratings are pretty good on the whole. The reason is simple. Actors, writers, technicians, and other people who stayed with the show for its full run begin to earn pay bumps, usually seeing solid raises in season six and seven especially. Then it goes on to talk about... it caught the show in a weird catch-22. Last Man Standing was successful, but not successful enough. It was doing well enough to justify better pay for the cast especially, but it wasn't doing well enough for the studio to demand more money from the network. There's one big reason this might be the case. Since ABC doesn't own the show, it doesn't get any of the show's ancillary revenues, as you pointed out, from streaming revenues and syndication and cable reruns to international broadcasts. All of these go to the studio, Fox. ABC pretty much just collects ad revenue at this point. Thus, ABC has no incentive to keep making more episodes of the show from a financial perspective, where Fox has huge incentive to do so. It's easy to see how that situation could have grown unsustainable, which is why they think Fox is, or potentially at least another network, but maybe even Fox or a Fox property is going to wind up just airing the show anyway, because the show does well. It has an audience. They're not saying it's not successful. They're just saying, you know, it's kind of like the team that gets too... expensive, and then you have to break it up. Ask the Dallas Mavericks about this after their 2011 championship. Mm-hmm. I like how you're agreeing with that as if you have some idea what it is. but it's true in that, and by the way, look at what happened to the Dallas Mavs, as you can point out here after the 2011 season, Glenn. You want to chime in with detail on that?
Or? Yeah, they went right where they belong.
Where they ended up.
Fell apart.
Yeah, well, eventually that did happen.
Right.
And looking back, that
they had won stuff.
Do you break up a successful part of your franchise like that?
So, Glenn, earlier you were talking about Friday night being the death knell.
No, not the death knell.
I know where you're going, and I hate you.
It's not the death knell. It's just where you dump all your garbage.
Okay, because I was...
oh, my gosh, that reminds me. Wonderful World of Stu is on tonight.
I hate both of you.
Glenn Beck.
The fusion of entertainment and enlightenment.
We are one. The Glenn Beck Program.
Mercury. You're listening to the Glenn Beck
Program.
Okay,
so this is weird. So we're just having an argument with Jeffy on this. Amber Tamblyn, who is, I don't know if she's married or she is a partner of David Cross, but... they had a baby. Yeah, she is married. Husband, comedian David Cross, sampled some of her breast milk. He loved it.
So what?
Tamblyn said. At first, he was like, I'm not sure about this. This is an honorary thing that husbands have to do, drink their wives' breast milk. I read that.
No.
Right.
No.
They're saying that's not uncommon.
I don't believe that. That's sick.
I don't know. I never tried it. Never wanted to. Never
have. Never
really?
Will.
Nope.
No.
Wow.
No, thank you.
And you did. You just took a big slug before you put it in the fridge.
This is the Glenn Beck Program. Mercury.
This is the Glenn Beck Program.
All right. We could. We have several things. Very little time. We have several things we could talk about. We could talk about the breast milk thing, which I just find creepy. But doctors say it's not as weird as I think it is. But I think it's really weird. We could talk about how much I hate Stu because he's going to end up being the richest guy on the show.
I would love to talk
about that.
It's
not accurate.
It is.
All hate Stu.
He's like, you're a numbers guy. You're a spreadsheet guy. So you pay attention to everything. We put our money in our 401k and then we're like, I don't know.
Stu's like, I don't know. The last time I looked at the numbers, I'm not sure when I invested in that yet.
Yeah.
Shut up.
Shut up. He bought Bitcoin at what? A dollar? How much was Bitcoin?
I started buying it around probably like $600. $600. But then it went down, and I was. But this is no one talks about those moments. Yeah. I wasn't
bragging
to anyone.
Because you left it in. You got it at $600. It's now at $1,900 a Bitcoin.
$1,950 as of today.
Okay, shut up. Are you greedy?
Yep. At some point,
you've earned enough money in Bitcoin.
Yeah, no, of course I don't. I just enjoy watching it, so I didn't put like any actual money in it. You know, I wish I had. I put money in it, but not.
At least there's $600. Yeah. Let's say you just put $600 in it.
Right.
Have you thought about taking now the $600 out?
Yeah, I'm getting to that point. I will say I'm hitting that level of maybe I should take a little of this off the table because it's gone up so far. I mean, you look at the charts of it; it's incredible. And a lot of this has to do with Chinese buying.
China.
I mean, that it really does look. You look at it from a year ago. It is up in the past year. $1,425. So if you bought it a year ago today, it has risen. It went from about $444 up to $1,956 at the moment. I say.
So
this.
Do you have? I have Zapo or XAPO. How do you say that? Zapo. It's the bank that I use.
The Coinbase, or the coin, the Bitcoin bank. I use Coinbase, which is a U.S. based company.
So yeah, mine's offshore. I don't trust. Mine's I think buried inside of a mountain in Switzerland someplace.
Mine's off planet.
That's
it
smart.
It's just
that's smart. And when we get electricity there to be able to transmit, that's how safe you are. But I just got something back that said because of the volume now of Bitcoin, that you have to pay more if you want faster transactions.
Yeah, just slow, delayed transactions. Yeah, that's happening across...
Because it's starting to be traded so fast and used so much that now if you're like in a coffee shop, you need that transaction to happen fast. So they don't know how to prioritize.
And you know what's interesting is that people wait to this point to start buying stuff. Instead of at 300 when it was incredibly affordable, they'll go, wow, that's really going up. Now I'm going to pay $2,000 per coin for it. And then you're really running a risk because it may go the other way very fast.
This thing could be zero tomorrow. Very quickly. It could literally be zero. It could be
this
double.
Is the kind
but
of
they
thing,
do the same thing with gold.
This is the kind of thing that if you had $600... You buy a fraction of a coin. I don't even know if you can do that. I'm sure you can.
Oh, yeah.
But you just buy. If you had $200, go to find a Bitcoin bank and put your money, $200, in there, and then just leave it alone. And if it takes off, your $200, if this really is the money of the future, the $200 will be worth a fortune. A fortune.
It also could be worth $0.
That's why the money that I have in there is a joke because I said I'm not. I have a very low risk tolerance. I work hard for my money. I don't want my money going away. And so they're like, you know, when they put me on the, you know, whenever you talk to somebody, you know, your 401k specialist or your, you know, your retirement broker or whatever, and they say, well, what's your risk tolerance? I am at -1. Okay. So there's a chance of losing it? No, I'll bury it in my backyard.
And they always tell you, just risk what won't kill you.
Yeah, just
risk. Just risk what you can and comfortably do. If you, can't afford to lose that kind of money, you don't risk it.
So I have like $5 in Bitcoin, but it has gone up so much. It's crazy. It's worth. If you could just say, what money am I going to go spend on, you know,
a weekend out,
I'm going to have $500 and it's going to be a crazy weekend, whatever. Put that in Bitcoin. Don't do that on the weekend and just put that away.
One of the things I think that would appeal to the audience when you're talking about this is there is a limited amount of Bitcoins that can ever be produced. So think about that in the context of the currency of the United States of America, for example.
Yes.
Where they can print money whenever they want. One of the things I like about it and is appealing about it to me is I think the number is like 21 million Bitcoins will ever be produced. And all that will happen is they will go up or down in value, right? That number will stay forever.
You'll just start fracturing them.
Yeah. Now, they're not even out yet. They're still in the middle of producing these things. And it's too complicated to get into the process of it. But the bottom line is I like that because it gives you a sense. It's a way of going around the financial system nonsense that we always talk about.
It's really truly this. Imagine if there was a neighborhood where you're buying the first house in this real, what's promising to be a really posh neighborhood. But there's a couple of neighborhoods around, and this one is completely different. This one is groundbreaking. This, it's buying a house in an orange field in 1955 in Anaheim, California. You either know I've got real property that's going to be worth a fortune, or I'm going to be laughed at forever. But once that property is sold, there's only a finite amount of property. Once all those houses are sold in that complex, then there's no less demand for it. It's just that they're all owned. So they have to start splitting everything up. And those people in the housing complexes are saying, well, you want to buy a fraction of this, a fraction of this. It just makes the housing prices go through the roof because you can't go out and find another house. It's this property and that's it. That's really what this is. Right now, all the houses haven't been built and you don't know if this is the winner yet. But if this is the winner, once all the bitcoins are out, it's going to be off the charts huge. You invest now, you know, I don't even know how many times it would have to go up, but you could literally be at the ground floor of AT&T or Ford or something like that that changed the world.
And how many times have we seen this? Because I always feel this way, which is I came in late. Everyone else knows about it.
Always.
There's no point. Right?
Always.
I always think that way. And I thought that way.
Google and Apple for me.
Amazon, Apple, Google, yeah. All those things that were huge already. And we're like, well, they can't get any bigger than this. Everyone knows it's all priced in. I'm not going to bother. And then it winds up going up. Again, these things fall apart all the time. And I would say Bitcoin is way more susceptible to something like this.
Yeah.
Because
this
a country
Amazon,
could
Google
ban
or,
it.
Yeah.
Right? A country could ban it. However, on the other side, it's not at all impossible that, let's say, a Greece in their worst moment, if their currency collapsed, that they would actually move into a situation where this became their currency.
Once that happens.
And once that happens.
That's why some people are starting to talk about Bitcoin or a Bitcoin-like as being the emergency escape hatch for these countries, that they'll just take whatever they have left and put it all in Bitcoin and say, that's our national currency. And if that happens, and China just opened it up in China for everybody, if you want to buy Bitcoin, well, China doesn't do that. China wants everybody on the yuan. Why are they opening up for Bitcoin? They're opening up for Bitcoin, and that's why you're seeing this spike. All of a sudden, all these Chinese, you know, what is it, 14 trillion people, all of a sudden pouring in to this.
Anybody investing in the movie Alien Covenant this weekend?
No, is it supposed to be good?
I doubt it. I mean, this far down the line?
I know.
I don't know. They're doing
is.
Some of the really good reboots. Has anybody seen
Sometimes.
Guardians of the Galaxy besides me?
Yeah, I saw it. I didn't really like it that much. I thought it was a mess.
What?
I thought it was
what?
A mess.
Now, to review. Wait, to review.
A mess.
It was a mess.
You said no. You mm-hmm. said you thought it might be... The
perfect movie.
I thought it was.
My gosh, you thought it was the perfect movie?
Yeah, I did. I thought it was. I thought, I watched it the whole time. I thought it had great character development.
Wow.
I thought it had great character development.
Well, they developed the characters in the first one. And then this
but
plot was just a mess.
Oh,
you really,
I didn't think so.
Really?
Yeah, I really liked it.
There were some funny moments.
I thought it was funnier than the last one.
Oh, not at all. Really?
Yeah, I did.
Wow.
Now, I may have to go back and watch the first one. I haven't seen it since it came out. So
yeah.
I might have to go back and watch the first one. But I really, and maybe it's because I had really low expectations.
And that's my problem. I had really high ones because I loved the first one so much.
Yeah, see? I had low expectations going in because well, sequels are never good. I had high hopes for this, but I didn't. I went to see it before all the reviews were out and everybody else.
So if you haven't seen it and you have high expectations, don't go see it.
No, I stand by. I thought it was a great movie. Anybody on the floor see it?
No.
What did you think?
Russ, you saw it?
I actually checked my watch.
Oh,
did you?
Really?
See?
But at the end, I liked it.
So he said at the end he liked it, but he checked his watch.
In the middle.
Yeah. Oh, we're done.
Wow, I did not. I was
surprised at the length of it, I have to say. Now, I did not see it
yet. How long is it? 18 hours? 18 and a half? It's like Bees, right? From
Burns. The five-part series.
2 hours and 13 minutes, I believe, which is pretty long.
I did not check my watch. My whole family went. We went as a pack and didn't. We loved it.
See, I've seen the first one probably five times, and I love it every time.
Saw it once.
It's almost, to me, that's almost a go-to movie like Princess Bride.
I agree with you.
Probably my expectations were too high.
Every character in it, I loved.
I love him too.
But I think Chris Pratt. Yeah. I think Chris Pratt is
brilliant.
I think
so
he's
likeable.
The Jimmy Stewart or Tom Hanks of this generation.
Yeah, I think so too.
He's so likable. He's so funny. I thought all of the characters
and they're all
were
good
in it.
I thought Groot was better than
Groot was last time. I love Baby Groot.
I will say I like Chris Pratt too. Until recently, obviously, what he did I thought was despicable.
What do you do?
What?
What do you mean? What do you do?
Chris Pratt?
Yeah. What did he do?
He posted a video about Guardians of the Galaxy in which he said he pointed to the subtitles and said, "Hey, why are you reading the subtitles when I'm right here and you can see me and you can hear me? You can just listen to me say it. Why are you looking at these subtitles?"
Oh, I see. Oh, my
God. And you know who was pissed off about that?
Well, the deaf and the blind.
Deaf people.
And what about the blind people who said, "You can see me," because they couldn't. So,
they couldn't. That's right.
Right.
So he got lots of complaints and he posted a video in sign language.
Unless
to make everyone
had,
feel
like
okay
a Braille
about
computer,
it.
Then you could maybe.
I mean, Chris Pratt
is one of the nicest guys.
That's a real
ever.
Story, by
it's
the way.
It's so, ridiculous.
Yeah.
And that's he just actually people, apologized.
That's
for
just
that,
people
by the way,
wanting to pull him down.
Yes. Yeah,
I don't know if he's real religious or anything, but do you
remember?
Oh,
he is. Yeah,
he is, right? I saw him. In a some guy was just being a jerk as he was getting into a car. Did you see this? And the guy was wearing a cross around his neck and he didn't say anything to him except as he was getting in the car, he looks at him and the guy's just screaming something and he's like, "Hey man, you might want to reconsider the necklace. I don't think you understand it," or something like that. It was really
and that's
he
powerful.
Said it. Yeah, he didn't say it mean or anything else. He just was like, "Dude, I mean, this isn't the way he would act.
Why are you representing the cross like that?"
Yeah. I mean, I thought it was great. Because it was an execution tool. That's not Jesus. This guy is Bill.
Okay? Oh, okay. That's a straight stance. <Okay. laughs>
You're listening to the Glenn Beck Program.
Mercury. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
This is really such an agonizing article from CNN. Donald Trump just staked his presidency on four words. A joint news conference with Colombian President Thursday, President Donald Trump was asked a very simple question. Had he urged then FBI Director James Comey to slow or stop an FBI investigation into deposed National Security Advisor Michael Flynn? "No, no. Next question," Trump responded. It was over in a flash. But in those four words, Trump staked the viability of his presidency.
Did he?
I want you to listen.
How many times do they say that about Obama?
I want you to listen carefully. I did not have sexual relations with that woman,
right.
Ms. Lewinsky. I mean, you want to talk about staking a president's viability.
Yeah.
There it is. And they didn't have a problem with that.
Can I give you one more on how far we've moved real quick before the end?
Yeah.
14 years ago, Dennis Kucinich was running for president. Remember him?
Oh, my gosh.
Remember how crazy he was?
Yeah.
Remember how nuts he was just even for Democrats?
Yes.
Crazy liberal.
Yeah.
His platform from 14 years ago. "I will combine this with the creation of a truly universal single-payer healthcare system, universal free preschool, free college tuition at state colleges and universities, a public jobs program to restore our infrastructure, and withdrawal from NAFTA and the WTO in favor for bilateral trade pacts that protect workers' rights here and abroad. I will make it a top priority to restore the federal minimum wage to its 1968 adjusted value. I also support legislation introduced by John Conyers to deny federal funds to police departments who practice racial profiling." Bernie Sanders almost won the presidency with that exact platform.
And I will tell you, the GOP is proposing
a lot of it.
A lot of it. Amazing.
The Glenn Beck Program.
Mercury.